Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 14th day of December 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. We'll take a look at the cash grain segment with the folks at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County and talk about the weather with the guys up at Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, I'll bring you the agricultural news for the day, and we'll hear from Daryl Good about the December 1 grain stocks report, how it's calculated, and what it says about the marketplace. And that all happens right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's take a look now at the numbers in Chicago as they finished up for this Monday afternoon. Nearby corn at 381 3/4, up 8 3/4. The March, it's $3.79, 3 3/4 higher. In the May, up 4 cents at 384 1/4. July, 389, 4 1/4 higher. In December, corn at $3.99, up 3 cents. Soy complex, January beans, 3 1/2 higher at $8.74 1/4. The March at $8.76, up 2 1/4. In May, up to $8.82. July at $8.81 1/2, up 2 cents. And next year's November beans, 0.5 cent higher at $8.90 3/4. Bean meal up 5 3/4 at $2.77.80. January at $2.75.50, up $1.80. Bean oil 22 cents higher at $31.30. Soft red winter wheat, December contract, $4.87 3/4, up a nickel. And the July, the harvest month, at 5.03 1/2, up 3. July hard red at 5.08 1/4, 5 1/2 cents higher. Feeder cattle finished the January contract, or actually trading, still down $4.50 at $147.62 1/2, and the March at $145.75, $4.37 1/2 lower. Live cattle in the December down $2.50 at this hour at $118.95 for the December. February at $123.77 1/2, and they're down $2.37 1/2. Lean hogs for the day currently trading 52 1/2 cents lower at $55.47 1/2. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Let's take a look at some of the outside markets at this hour and see how they're trading for the day. The nearby contract in the crude oil at $36.39 is up 77 cents. It's been to a low today of $34.53. Ethanol futures in the January contract at $1.45 3/10. That's down 0.2 cents. The gasoline RBOB wholesale price at $1.25 1/2, down 2 6/10. Diesel fuel or heating oil in the January at $1.13, 1.5 cents lower for the day. Natural gas at $1.89 3/10, 9 7/10 cents. Lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average up 35 points at 17,296, and the dollar trading at 97.565. That's up 0.014. Gold futures at a $1,065.25 are down $10.50. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area. Scattered showers mainly after 4 this afternoon. Cloudy and a high of just 53, and then we'll drop back today. Scattered showers this evening of 7 until 7. Mostly cloudy and a low of 40. It'll be breezy out there tonight with a wind out of the west at 10 to 20, gusting to 30. Chance of rainfall set at 30% in the area. And then tomorrow, partly sunny skies. We'll go to 49 degrees. West winds at 6 to 10. They'll turn to the south-southeast in the afternoon. Winds could gust as high as 16 miles an hour. On Tuesday evening, a 30% chance of rainfall. On Wednesday, a 30% chance of rainfall. We'll go to a high that day of 53. On Thursday, sunny and 37. Friday, partly sunny and just 33 degrees.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon, the 14th day of December. On the line with us is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
I was busy during the day at the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, the first in a series of five. We'll be in DeKalb tomorrow at Ferrandas and the Civic Center in Peoria on Wednesday. And Thursday we'll be in Springfield at the Crown Plaza and at the Holiday Inn in Mount Vernon on Friday. And anybody who wants to walk into those, about 7:45, registration open, $75, so you can come if you'd like. However, it meant I didn't get a chance really to pay much attention to what happened in the commodity markets, and I was surprised to see that December corn at least was up 8¾ cents. What happened there today?
Well, December futures went off the board here at noon and last minute position squaring, and it that's about the highest close we've seen since November there. D's 15 went off a premium to the March there, just indicating, you know, we're seeing tight cash situation and upfront demand here in the marketplace. March corn's 379 traditionally. The next contract usually maneuvers or moves towards where the front month expired at, so hopefully we can move on up to that 381¾ area, if not a little higher here this week, as you know the market tries to put in its traditional little bit of a Santa Claus rally here and keep that Grinch away here for a few weeks, Todd.
I think farmers would like that. Will they get an opportunity? I don't know about this. For cash prices in the $4 level, that would be very difficult, I would think. And they'd like, probably even more importantly than that, a $9 level in the soybeans.
Well, corn, we're not that far away. If you look at the Decatur bid, you got to be mobile, of course. Some ethanol plants in some areas that are still open, that's not filled up. There's still a little premium there. So you kind of shop around a little bit and keep your options open. That's been what we've been talking about for the last several years, marketing-wise, to stay flexible. We did record a price reversal of the upside. Corn was already an uptrend, but beans made a new low and closed a little higher. We even saw the outside markets, trying to get a real turn here. Crude oil was on its rear end here earlier this morning, and it's up about 69 as we speak. So we're in a situation here. If we see some follow-through here tomorrow, we ought to resume or provide a little bit more investor confidence. Commodity funds, still short the grain complex for the most part. Hopefully they'll want to cover some of those positions going to year end. They were buyers going into midday, about 5,000 beans, 1,000 meal, 5,000 corn, 3,000 wheat, not huge numbers. Volume's kind of light, and the fear is we're kind of losing everybody's interest here at these lower levels.
You mentioned volume being light. We talked a little bit about volatility this morning, some of the big money that really has left the marketplace, apparently. How big is that, and what's the difference between volatility and volume, and what do those two things mean in the market?
Well, volume-wise, you measure the number of contracts traded. Open interest is the open positions for sale in the books. You need traders like volume, maneuver in and out of a marketplace. Whenever you start seeing narrow price range, volume tends to be a little low. You get some day traders wanting to, buy high and sell low and try to scalp a little out of the money. But when volume's fairly over low, there's no move. Traders become kind of disinterested in over the short term. When you talk about volatility, basically the simplest way to kind of look at that is the price range or the trading range you've been in. And if you stay in a trading range, volatility is relatively low. Everybody's kind of comfortable for say, and volatility, especially in the options, are kind of down to the lower end of the range we've been in for the last 5 to 6 years. And for volatility in options, you want to buy low volatility and sell high volatility, for say. So it's an excellent opportunity for option traders for those who've moved cash grain to look at some option purchases to replace grain, or even put a price floor under you, for example. So there's opportunities all around in there. You just got to kind of pick one and do one that fits your comfort zone.
Am I right in thinking that in the go-go days, just a couple of years ago when we were really high-priced and we had lots of outside money in the marketplace, we had large swings, big volume, and a lot of and then the swings would be volatility. But it was related to the volume to some extent, and being at a higher price, you could have a wider swing and not be as big a percentage of change. And it's somewhat similar to the bottom end, where you would have really low volume, and because of a lack of what they would call liquidity, volatility gets really kind of wild, and so you get big swings that are more far more hurtful, I think, to the market. And then at this time, we have lower volume, but not big swings, so it's a very stable market. Is that something of an accurate depiction?
Yeah, you know, until something happens somewhere, we'll see what happens. But yeah, high volatility happens when you have big moves. Weather, for example, volatility picks up when you go in the weather market because the weather forecast can move the market sharply up or sharply down, and you need to keep that in mind. But when corn was $5, $6, $7, the risk is to the downside. Well, now corn's here in this $3 level. It still has downside risk, but it's not going to move, hopefully, a dollar or two down. And so what happens is the market sort of digests the news here through the winter. The next market maker will be South American weather, then our summer weather. Then that's when the opportunity is to rally to the upside. So volatility will pick up as we go into the growing season. Now, when you see the big weather moves, and when we were up in that $5, $6 level, volatility and options were 25% up to 40% volatility. Now we're down to this 9%, 10%, 12% volatility. So that's some traders watching. Hedgers watch to kind of manage some of their risk as far as what type of strategy to use.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for the explanation. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you not again until after the first of the year. I'm going to take 2 weeks off next week. So we'll have a closing market report, but I've already started pre-producing those. So we'll get those all out of the way, and then we'll get started on the new year when we talk with you again.
Well, safe travels, and hope everyone has a good holiday season.
All right. Thanks so much, Kurt.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and does join us on this 14th day of December. And I am traveling this week with the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. Kicked off that meeting series this morning at the iHotel. What a really fantastic meeting it was, in fact. Just not only the participation of the folks, there were about, I think, 280 in the room. But the guys, the ag economists, made some great presentations. This is just a half-day event. Starts at 7:45 in the morning for registration. So if you've not got your ticket, you can walk in and register. Pay $75 at the table there and then see this event. We finish up at the noon hour with a meal. But when we get to the meal, we're done. So then they're off to the next place. In fact, we'll be off to DeKalb, where we'll be at Ferrandez tomorrow. So if you're in that area and you want to visit with us, we'll see you at 7:45 a.m. We'll be at the Civic Center in Peoria on Wednesday. On Thursday, we'll be in Springfield at the Crown Plaza. And then on Friday, at the Holiday Inn in Mount Vernon. And I'll be reporting live, of course, live to tape from all of those places. So our expectations are that we should have a great week. And then following that, I'll take a couple of weeks off. However, we will have the regular closing market report. In today's agricultural news, the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal suffered a huge setback after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said in an interview Congress should not take up the trade deal before the November elections. McConnell told the Washington Post that President Obama would be making a big mistake by pushing for a vote on TPP during the election cycle. He says there is significant pushback to the trade pact. McConnell opposed the TPP provisions that impact his state's tobacco industry. Finance Chair Orrin Hatch opposes provisions that affect his state's pharmaceutical industry. And the GOP is reluctant to help Obama score a legacy trade win. Democrats reliant on labor and environmental support also oppose the deal, and congressional and presidential candidates may not want a vote during next spring's primaries. American Farm Bureau trade advisor Dave Samuelson says McConnell is speaking for groups that want issues with the TPP addressed.
Senator McConnell is just saying there are issues that different groups want addressed. Even after the agreement's been signed, they want some more effort on these, and that unless those are looked at and something is done about them, it'll be hard to put together the support necessary to get enough votes for passage.
As for the prospect of bringing up the TPP during the lame duck session following the 2016 elections, Samuelson says,
if this is a chance to finally get this done after all the political pressures are off, and maybe there'll be changes in control, and it looks like this may be the only opportunity to move it, then that may be an argument to try to get it done in a lame duck. I think the other argument to that always is, lots of issues get put aside during an election year, and the lame-duck calendar tends to be pretty crowded.
He says the timing of the TPP vote will depend on the political dynamic 6 months from now. However, putting it off could mean leaving it up to the next president or even risking problems with TPP trading partners. Well, from Washington, we'll move to the Midwest. Following approval by Illinois, Missouri remains the only state yet to give the go-ahead for the Grain Belt Express, a 780-mile transmission line from Kansas to Eastern Power Grids. The Kansas City Star reports the opposition lies in the hands of farmers who oppose the $2.2 billion transmission line. The farmers simply don't want to see the transmission lines dotting the landscape, nor do they want to support a business venture. Clean Line Energy, the Houston-based company pushing the project. The line through northern Missouri would connect the Saudi Arabia of wind, Kansas to Indiana, through the state of Illinois. The three other states have granted approval for the line. The Missouri Public Service Commission ruled against the transmission line earlier this year. The company filed for an appeal at that time. Clean Line could also seek approval from the federal government for the project. Complicating the process further, however, is the possibility of an appeal of the approval in Illinois. And finally today, the National Corn Growers Association Nominating Committee will be accepting applications from members for the 2017 Corn Board for a few more weeks. Through the Corn Board, members can become an integral part of the organization's leadership. The NCGA Corn Board represents the organization on all matters, while directing both policy and supervising day-to-day operations. Nominated candidates will be introduced at the March 2016 Corn Congress meeting held in conjunction with the Commodity Classic in New Orleans. Corn Board members will be elected at the July 2016 Corn Congress in Washington, D.C., and the new term begins October the 1st. You can find more online at ncga.com. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. The USDA will release the final estimate of the size of last fall's corn harvest January the 12th. It will also calculate how much corn was on hand in the nation as of the beginning of this month on that same date. The January 12th reports are really important to the commodity markets. These set the tone for trade over the first quarter of the new year, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Darrell Good. However, he concedes it's difficult to anticipate the estimate of the magnitude of the December 1 corn inventories, since neither the final estimate of the size of the 2015 crop nor the magnitude of consumption during the first quarter of the marketing year are actually known.
What can be calculated is the likely magnitude of stocks if, one, the final production estimate is equal to the November forecast, two, if non-feed consumption during the quarter was near the level estimated from the incomplete consumption data already revealed, and three, if feed and residual use of corn during the quarter was at the pace of total marketing year consumption projected by the USDA. A December 1 stocks estimate near the calculated value would be considered neutral for corn prices.
The Ag Economist writes in the FarmDoc Daily website this week that the most is known about the magnitude of exports during the first quarter of the marketing year. Cumulative export inspections for September, October, and November totaled 277 million bushels. Now, Census Bureau estimates through October exceeded cumulative export inspections by 16 million bushels. Historically, that margin's been even larger by the end of November. Assuming that to be the case this year, corn exports during the first quarter of the marketing year, thanks good, were likely very close to 300 million bushels. That level of exports would be about 100 million bushels less than during the first quarter of last year, and the smallest of the quarter since the extremely small crop of 2012, and the third smallest on record since 1974. Here's the rest of the corn consumption story.
Based on USDA reports, 872 million bushels of corn were used for ethanol production in September and October. Use during November can be estimated based on the projection of ethanol use from the EIA. November use is estimated at 433 million bushels, bringing the total estimate for the quarter up to 1.305 billion bushels.
For the 2015-16 marketing year, the USDA projects domestic corn consumption for the production of food, seed, and industrial products other than ethanol at 1.38 billion bushels. And this leaves the least known factor, feed usage, in the first quarter. For the year, USDA has projected feed and residual usage of corn at 5.3 billion bushels. An estimated 2.2 billion bushels of corn were used in the feed and residual category during the first quarter of the marketing year last year. With a year-over-year increase in the number of hogs fed, the number of cattle on feed, and the number of dairy cows on farms, feed and residual use should be proceeding at least as rapidly as last year, even with no increase in broiler and chick placements and a decline in layer numbers. Corn consumption during the first quarter of the marketing year is estimated to be near 4.174 billion bushels. When you do the calculation, it points to a December 1 stocks estimate of 11.218 billion bushels of corn on hand in the United States. This, reports Daryl Good, is almost identical to the level of stocks last year at the same time. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Let's take a quick look at the cash grain market. Amy Sage is here. Amy, tell me all about the market. We have maybe a minute and a half.
You bet. So we actually had a good day today. Corn and beans both up 3.5 cents here nearby. We've got new crop up just a hair here as well. So still not a lot of farmer selling out there. So we still are seeing a lot of farmer length. And at some point, we'll probably start to see a little bit of that let go just for cash flow purposes. But in the meantime, rail values have softened up a little bit. We're starting to see some stuff move, mostly, I think, commercial creation of space going into the beginning of the year to make room for winter receipts here. But still, basis levels have remained firm from a local cash perspective. So that's been good. Still not a lot of movement for the 2016 crop, but seeing some people wanting to take a look at some strategies going forward. And if we do get any type of bounce here, I think after the first of the year, we'll start to see some movement.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Bouillabaisse Day. The hearty, soupy seafood stew is widely thought to have originated in Marseille, where fishermen fed themselves with unsaleable fish and fish scraps caught in their nets. On this day in agricultural history in 1795, John Blumfeldt Jervis was born. A civic engineer, he designed and built the Boston Aqueduct. And he won approval for an idea that a railroad should be incorporated into the Delaware and Hudson Canal Project at a time when there were no railroads in the United States. In 1820, Abram Lyle was born, a Scottish ship owner and sugar refiner. He was best known for inventing Lyle's golden syrup, a byproduct of sugarcane that serves as a spread or sweetener for cooking. By the way, the green and gold tins in which Lyle's is sold today were introduced in 1885. And in 1943, John Harvey Kellogg died, an American physician, vegetarian, and health food pioneer. He developed dry breakfast cereals that sparked the flaked cereal industry. Kellogg was superintendent of the Battle Creek Sanitarium, where he developed the first breakfast cereals for his patients, granola and Toasted Flakes. His brother, William Kellogg, founded the Battle Creek Toasted Cornflake Company to produce cornflakes, and that company eventually was shortened to Kellogg's. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon, the 14th day of December. Mark Russo is here with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois. Happy holidays to you, Mark.
Yeah, happy holidays to you as well.
Hey, it's been, speaking of holidays, more like, I don't know, Australia than it has been the United States. Maybe not that warm, but it's been really warm. How odd are the temperatures we've had in the month of December?
Well, this December is shaping up to be not only the record warmest December here for the lower 48 since 1950, it could be in our whole database that goes back to 1895, and it's certainly shaping up to be that way with what already we've seen here in the U.S., but also with, from a forecast standpoint, this incredible warmth is going to continue. There's going to be a brief cool down to basically normal levels for a day or two coming up this weekend, but thereafter, it's blowtorch warmth again across the central and eastern U.S. And again, that's causing this December to go down as the warmest December basically on record.
Is it odder to have 67 degrees in Illinois in December, or I'm not sure how high they went in Texas, but someplace in the 80s, they were really warm too.
Yeah, well, it's more typical of what you see in like the latter part of October versus the middle part of December, and high temperatures, you know, climbing into the 60s here in Illinois, low 70s down south, even up to near 70 degrees in New York City, and temperatures in the 80s. They have very more mid-fall type of weather versus the early start to winter here.
All El Nino related?
Certainly not, Todd. El Nino is one factor, but the more important factor is the polar vortex, or the lack of the polar vortex moving down into the mid-latitudes this winter. It's very strong, very stable, locked up across the Arctic, and that's keeping extreme cold bottled up north rather than allowing it to flow here or areas such as Europe and China.
How'd it get locked up?
One of the reasons for that is actually the El Nino event and the strong upper-level westerlies, and even those westerlies at the surface, that is what we call reducing wave activity flux. And so what that means is that that's limiting the transport of heat from the tropics up north into the northerly latitudes, and more with westerly flow, that's allowing the polar vortex to spin up stronger than normal, and that's keeping Arctic air bottled up north.
Yes. Do I remember correctly that a lot of times what happens with the polar vortex is we pull cold air out of Siberia, drop it across the top of the globe, and then it drops into the United States? So my question, and we've got about 40 seconds left here, is what's happening in Russia?
Well, across Siberia, they've been biased on the warm side as well. So with the polar vortex, think of it more of a hemispheric feature. And as long as it's stable and locked up at the North Pole, then yeah, northern Siberia is cold, but you need the polar vortex to weaken and move or become more stretched out. That's how we had our extreme cold the past couple of winters. Or like in the winter of 2009-10, it was like pinballing all across the northern hemisphere. So everybody was cold. It was Europe, it was China, it was the U.S. This year it's the complete opposite.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He's with Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, and helps us wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.